So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, Text 43. Chapter 7 is titled Lord Krishna Instructs Uddhava. So in this series of dialogue that's happening currently, Lord Krishna is instructing Uddhava to stay for some time in the material world and then return to the spiritual world. As a part of the instructions which Lord Krishna is giving to Uddhava, Lord Krishna is giving the example of the Avadhuta Brahmana, and he describes the life and the philosophy given by Avadhuta Brahmana, and that way Lord Krishna is instructing Uddhava in the science of devotional service and detachment. So currently we are on text number 43. Now if you see thus far, what's happening here is that the soul and the material body is being distinguished in various verses, and the analogy is being given to so many entities that we see all around us. For example, an analogy is being given to the earth, analogy is being given of the water, of the air, of the sky, and so on and so forth. In today's verse, the analogy of the sky is being given. Right. So we see what is this example all about. So in text number 43, it is as follows.
Teja apannamaye bhave, meghadyai vayune ritai, nasprishyate nabhasatva, kalasrishthe gunai kumar, tejo apannamaye bhave, nasprishyate nabhasatva, kalasrishthe gunai kumar, tejo apannamaye bhave, meghadyai vayune ritai, nasprishyate nabhasatva, kalasrishthe gunai kumar,
teja,
fire,
water, anna, and earth, mayai, consisting of, bhave, by objects, mega adye, clouds and so on, vayuna, by the wind, iritai, which are blown, nasprishyate, is not touched, nabha, the ethereal sky, tatvat, in the same way, kalashishthai, which have been sent forth by time, gunai, by the modes of nature, uman, a person. Translation. Although the mighty wind blows clouds and storms across the sky is never implicated or affected by these activities. Although the mighty wind blows clouds and storms across the sky is never implicated or affected by these activities. Similarly, the spirit soul is not actually changed or affected by contact with the material nature. Although the living entity enters within a body made of earth, water and fire, and although he is impelled by the three modes of nature created by eternal time, his eternal spiritual nature is never actually affected. I repeat. Although the living entity enters within a body made of earth, water and fire, and although he is impelled by the three modes of nature created by eternal time, his eternal spiritual nature is never actually affected. Purport. Although the sky appears to be affected by the mighty movements of wind, rain, hurricanes, lightning and thunder, etc., the sky, being very subtle, is actually not affected, but is rather the background for such visible activities. Similarly, although the material body and mind undergo innumerable changes such as birth and death, happiness and distress, love and hate, the eternal living entity is merely the background for such activities. The spirit soul, being most subtle, is not actually affected. Only due to misidentification with the superficial activities of the body and mind does the soul undergo terrible distress within the material world. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya has pointed out that the individual living entity must struggle to revive his divine spiritual qualities. The individual living entity must struggle to revive his divine spiritual qualities. The living entity is part and parcel of the supreme entity called Krishna, and as such, the individual soul is also a reservoir of godly qualities. The personality of Godhead, however, automatically manifests these qualities without any hindrance, whereas the conditioned soul must struggle to revive such qualities. I repeat this line. The personality of Godhead, however, automatically manifests these qualities without any hindrance, whereas the conditioned soul must struggle to revive such qualities. Thus, although both the personality of Godhead and the personality of the living entity are eternal and transcendental, the personality of Godhead is always supreme. By realizing all this with clear intelligence, the conditioned soul can rise to the spiritual platform. By realizing all this with clear intelligence, the conditioned soul can rise to the spiritual platform. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Charshurunmilitam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Murtare Swayam Rupa Sadamayam Sadashiva Sadantikam Vande Vam Shri Guru Shri Yukavatamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sthapitam Sahagana Arunatamitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Bhavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Arunatamitam Shri Vishwanatha Shri Krishna Arunatamitam Dina Bandhuta Bhagavate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Sakta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanubhute Devi Pranamami Kriyapriye Panchakarnabhyascha Kripadhyubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yeah. present in front of you on a nice Monday morning. I have been a standby speaker, so the original speaker is missing somewhere. It's a last minute replay. Sorry to disappoint you. Please bear with me for whatever lacuna that may be there in the presentation today. So here we see that an analogy is being made to the sky, which does not get affected by the winds that blow clouds as well as storms. So it doesn't take too much of intelligence to understand that we are talking about the soul here. The soul is not affected by material nature. That's what basically the analogy is all about. However, as we saw in the purport here, it is mentioned that because the soul comes under the grip of material nature, there is an apparent feeling as if we have been affected by the modes of material nature. That is called as Maya or illusion. We all know about it. However, there are people like this Avadhuta Brahmana who are not affected even when the soul is present within the material body. So such personalities are popularly known as Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means a person who is liberated while being inside the material body. So today we will spend some time talking about the characteristics of a person who is a Jivan Mukta and what it takes to attain the status of a Jivan Mukta. To attain the status, whatever is given here on the board. So, one has to become a Jivan Mukta. One can become a Jivan Mukta only when one gives up associating with the material body. One has to dissociate oneself from the bodily concept of life, understanding fully well that one is the spirit soul. This is a given. There is a small caveat here. When we say we dissociate ourselves from the material body, that is definitely a characteristic of the Jivan Mukta. Being oblivious to the needs of the body is one characteristic of a Jivan Mukta, but that is not the whole and soul of being a Jivan Mukta. There are many more things beyond that. A case in point is Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, when he wanted to become immortal, he completely lost consciousness of his body. But can we call him as a Jivan Mukta? Obviously not. He was so unaware of his body that in his tapasya, his body had been eaten by moths and ants. To such an extent was his body finished that when Lord Brahma went to see where Hiranyakashipu is doing his tapasya, Lord Brahma had trouble finding him. Finally he saw some ant hill and then he thought, oh maybe, okay, he's here. And obviously when Lord Brahma came in front of him, he just blessed him and Hiranyakashipu got back his body. Now when Hiranyakashipu got back his body, he did not get an ordinary body. It is described in the Bhagavatam that his body had this power that it could not be even struck by a thunderbolt. It was so powerful, his body. Even a thunderbolt cannot affect that body. This is the body that he got. And in that body, he wanted immortality. So Lord Brahma said, hang on, fine, I have given you a body which is extremely powerful, which is beyond the imagination of any human being, however, I can't grant immortality even to this body. And finally we see that that body was simply, which could not be struck with a thunderbolt, was easily torn by the nails of the Lord. And it was finished. So, the point here is, when we are talking about detachment from the material body or any austerity or tapasya which is performed in order to attain this detachment, such austerity or tapasya, if it is not connected to the plan of Lord Vishnu, such austerity is useless. That is the underlying point here. And anyone who may apparently externally perform such austerity cannot qualify to be called as a Jivan Mukta simply because he is externally appearing to be so detached from his material body. In fact, such benedictions which are given to people like Hiranyakashipu do not even last long. Hiranyakashipu wanted immortality. However, he could not even live his planned duration, planned lifetime. Because Brahma said, okay, you will at least get, you know, as long as I am there, you will be there. But what happened? Even that he could not live. What to speak of immortality? So therefore, any austerity which does not, is not in accordance with Vishnu's plan, is a waste of time and it is temporary. So Srila Prabhupada, we studied in our Bhakti Vaibhav, I think probably in the second year or something, that Srila Prabhupada gave a very interesting definition of liberation. Srila Prabhupada said, defined liberation not as inaction. Srila Prabhupada said, liberation doesn't mean inaction, but liberation means service without human mistakes. I repeat, liberation does not mean inaction, but liberation means service without human mistakes. So Hiranyakashipu performed so many mistakes. He did apras to the cow, he did apras to the women, he did apras to the entire community, he hassled the brahmanas, he did apras to the Vedas,
all kinds of apras he did.
And when the devas went to the Lord saying that now, you know, we can't tolerate him anymore and we can't do anything about it, so you have to come down and help us, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said that this very act of Hiranyakashipu itself will destroy him. In the Mahabharata, it is mentioned that when someone becomes too powerful materially and causes trouble to the entire community, it is mentioned that that person is destroyed by the very tears of the people to whom he is inflicting all this trouble. It is said that the tears of the people who we exploit, that is more than enough to drown us and finish us. That is given in the Mahabharata. Now, Hiranyakashipu was not an ordinary personality, though, you know, he is always typically condemned everywhere, in all classes and lectures. But he is not an ordinary personality. In fact, Hiranyakashipu was a personality who had Atmajnana. He absolutely knew what was the difference between the body and the soul. However, because he was destined by the Lord to be under illusion, and all of us know the pastime of Jaya and Vijaya, he was destined by the Lord to be under illusion. Despite having Atmajnana, he forgot Atmajnana. And then he sought immortality within that which is mortal. He wanted immortality within the material body. So, Srila Prabhupada says that we see that even practicing devotees have this tendency. Though we know that we are the soul and whatever activities that are done on the bodily platform is shramayevi kevalam, useless waste of time, still devotees get hooked on to the comforts of life despite all this knowledge. So when we go and search for a house in Melbourne, we are not satisfied with one bedroom or kitchen or two bedroom. No, we want a big house somewhere with 10 rooms in it, and then we want second house on top of that, saying that the first house is very small, right? And how many people are living in that house? 3 people are living in that house. 10 bedrooms are there. So even devotees sometimes get tempted to pursue all this material opulence because of peer pressure and for prestige in society. So like Hiranyakashipu, therefore what happens? Hiranyakashipu did not live his intended lifespan. Similarly, devotees also, because of so much hard work required to pay mortgage, devotees do not stay in this material world even for the prescribed quota of 100 years in Kali Yuga. Devotees completely burn themselves out by the age of 40-45, paying mortgage for 10 houses, right? And also the rent for the house and, mortgage for the car and other things, children's education in a, what is it, private school and so on and so forth. Just go on adding to the needs and then suffer and die prematurely. So Srila Prabhupada explained 8 symptoms of a Jivan Mukta, which we are going to study today. The 8 symptoms of a Jivan Mukta. As I mentioned earlier, Jivan Mukta means that the person is there in the material world. The person is there in the material body, but because the person is always engaged in Krishna consciousness, the person is qualified to be called as liberated. And actually the person is liberated. In Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives a very interesting verse defining this Jivanmukta. The verse is, Iha yasya harer dahe karmana manasagya nikhilashva api avatthasu Jivanmukta sa uchyate. I repeat, Iha yasya harer dahe karmana manasagya nikhilashva api avatthasu Jivanmukta sa uchyate. The meaning is, whatever his condition may be, I repeat, whatever his condition may be, one who is engaged fully with body, mind and speech in service of the Lord is liberated, even if he is within the material body. Whatever his condition may be, one who is fully engaged in body, mind and speech in service of the Lord is liberated even within this body. So that is called the Jivanmukta. Which means, again, the point here is, whatever the condition he may be, whatever condition the body may be, whatever condition the mind may be in, one has to still practice Krishna consciousness consistently to qualify to be called as a Jivanmukta. So, if we perceive our devotional service or the duties which are given to us in devotional service as a burden, then we cannot be called as a Jivanmukta. Because though the body is working very hard, the mind is rejecting the work of the body. The mind is not in sync with the body at all. Right? So in the material world, we see that most of us consider happiness to be equal to the comforts which are provided by gross matter. There is an intense endeavor to make our surroundings as comfortable as possible. So, recently when somebody was seeing a house, then this broker who was showing us the house was saying that, you know, don't go for 525, go for 630. So then I asked him, in 525 how much area do you get? He said, you'll get around 4 rooms. And I said, why somebody will want 635? No, there is a garden also outside that, you know. But then you can concrete the garden if you don't want. So why 5635? And then on top of that put concrete. Because we cannot maintain that garden. On top of that, we have to maintain the house also inside. So therefore, in the material world, we consider happiness in terms of the comforts which are all around us right now. Okay. But what happens is, only the body gets some temporary happiness. The mind doesn't get happiness. Because the mind is obviously engaged in thinking about the mortgage and what you have to pay. Nothing comes free in this material world. So it is important that the body and mind both are happy, for someone to be absolutely happy. Therefore, we see that last year, we had a record economic growth in India. Of course, now we have recession, exactly the opposite. But even amidst this economic growth in India, we saw that 2 out of 5 was the divorce rate in India. The divorce rate is 2 out of 5 last year. Okay. So, India is slowly catching up with the West in terms of advancement. It was not there in India. Divorce was taboo in India. In childhood, I remember when someone is divorced, then people say, divorce? Who is that in the colony? But nowadays it's common. Right? If you have a successful marriage, then people are surprised. Oh, 30 years? Like that. Okay. That is how Kali Yuga is changing. So despite the progress in India, everyone is having a lot of money in India now. Gone are the days when people are struggling. Of course, people are always struggling. The poor are always poor in India. But at least the middle class is having a lot of money, more money at its disposal. But still, what's happening? The body is comfortable. They are able to buy big flats, spend in lavish cars. But the mind is going exactly the opposite way. And therefore, we see all kinds of relationships are failing. So, Rupa Goswami discusses in Nectar of Devotion that the first characteristic of bhakti is Kleshagni and the second is Shubhada. So Kleshagni and Shubhada, Shubhada is what? Shubhada means that bhakti brings in all auspiciousness. This auspiciousness is one of the characteristics of a Jivanmukta. So coming to the 8 symptoms of a Jivanmukta, this is mentioned in the Katha Upanishad. Okay, so let us discuss one by one. What are the 8 symptoms of Jivanmukta now? The first symptom of a Jivanmukta is called as Apahata Papa. Apahata Papa. A-P-A-H-A-T-A. P-A-P-A. Apahata Papa. Apahata Papa means devoid of all sinful activities and sinful propensity. Not only activities, not only papam, but bijam, putam, everything is gone. There is no sinful propensity.
Apagata papam.
Srila Prabhupada mentioned that when one starts practicing devotional service in Krishna consciousness, such a devotee seldom falls to sinful activities. It is rare. It is possible we can fall down, but it is generally rare that devotees fall down when one is seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada said that the moment one takes vows in front of the spiritual master at the time of initiation, the moment one takes vows in front of the spiritual master, in front of the devatas, in front of the devotees, etc., as to not to break the regulative principles, Srila Prabhupada said, that is the first symptom of one becoming liberated. One step towards becoming Jivan Mukta is the initiation process. Because what happens is, the devotee automatically becomes extra careful not to revert back to his old habits. At least somewhere the consciousness is pinching. No, I have taken initiation. My spiritual master will suffer. So many people have witnessed me. So many people have blessed me. They have come. So many people think that now I am very elevated. I have got a tag of an initiated devotee. So for various reasons whatsoever, there is some check and balance within the mind. For genuine as well as not so genuine reasons. But there is some check. So devotees always become extra careful and do not revert to the old habits. Therefore, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is freed from all sinful activity and one who engages with determination in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such a person attains highest perfection. So this is the first characteristic of a Jivan Mukta, which we discussed, called as Appahata Papa, or means devoid of all sinful activities and propensity. The second quality of a Jivan Mukta is called as Vijara, V-I-J-A-R-A, Vijara. Vijara means not subject to the misery arising from old age. So the second characteristic of a Jivan Mukta is that he is not subject to miseries arising from old age. In fact, for a Jivan Mukta, the determination to practice Krishna consciousness increases with old age and does not decrease. In fact, Devananda Swami in one lecture was mentioning that when one starts seeing grey hair and wrinkles on the face, on the head and the face, then it is similar to the yellow signal in the roads in which we drive. It's similar to the amber signal or the yellow signal. Because what follows the yellow signal is red signal. So yellow signal means go slow, be cautious, know that red signal is coming now. But he mentioned that society is going exactly the opposite way. What they are trying to do, they are somehow trying to convert the yellow signal back into green signal. How do they do it? By using wrinkle free cream, by using hair dye, by doing surgery so that we can tighten the skin. So many things we see people are using. So we are trying to convert the amber into the green signal. And what happens? We think after that, after the application of all the surgery and hair dye and cosmetic, we think that the signal is now green. But what happens? It was amber. And amber only becomes red. So suddenly you think it is green, but it becomes red. And death. So this is the problem. In fact, in Hindi is basically a language derived from Sanskrit. So it's almost the same. In Hindi it is said 50 is called as pachas. Okay. So pachas came from the word as. Someone told me pachas came from the word as. As means desire. Pachas means enough desires now. 50 years now. The interesting thing, more interesting thing here is after pachas the next number is 51. 51 is called as ekavan. Ekavan comes from the word one. One means now time to go to the forest or Vrindavan. So Sanskrit is a very powerful language. It indicates what one is supposed to do. At what age? So We are talking about Vija, the second characteristic of a Jivan Mukta, which means the Jivan Mukta is not subject to miseries arising from old age. Srila Prabhupada said that an old body is a facility to increase one's commitment to Krishna. That is how a Jivan Mukta perceives an old body, not as a hindrance but as a facility to surrender more, not to adopt artificial means to portray youth and forget the reality of life. So this is the second symptom of a Jivan Mukta. The third symptom of a Jivan Mukta is called as Vimrityu. Vimrityu. V-I-M-R-T-Y-U. Vimrityu. Vimrityu means to prepare oneself so one does not take another material body. The preparations have started. Earlier, the realization had come. Now amber to red. Now, Vimrityu means preparing oneself so that one does not take another material body. So Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, Srila Prabhupada explains very elaborately. I think it's part of Varnashrama Dharma, which we studied in our Bhakti Yoga first year. Srila Prabhupada mentions, he explains why it is necessary to look after old people. Because Srila Prabhupada is talking about so many things there, taking care of Brahmana, taking care of cows, taking care of old people and so on and so forth. So Srila Prabhupada is mentioning very specifically that old people need to be taken care of. Why? Because if old people are not provided facilities for themselves so that they can attain higher perfection, the old people will become, anxiety will overwhelm them to such an extent that when they leave their body, it will be impossible for them to think of Krishna. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada mentioned in his purport that old people should be taken care of so they do not fail to remember Lord Krishna at the time of death. And all the comforts that they are given are to facilitate their thinking of the Lord at the time of quitting this body, so that they are not in any kind of other anxiety at all. So this is the third step, Vimrityu, third symptom of a Jivan Mukta, preparing oneself so that one does not take another material body. The fourth symptom of a Jivan Mukta is called as Vishoka, V-I-S-O-K-A, Vishoka. Vishoka means that the Jivan Mukta is callous, not careless, callous. Callous means, doesn't matter, chalta, callous. Callous to any material distress as well as any material happiness. Indifferent to material distress as well as happiness. That is the fourth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta. It is said that the real danger for a devotee, a practicing devotee, is not misery. But the real danger for a practicing devotee is being in the comfort zone. Because while practicing Krishna consciousness, anyway Krishna consciousness gives klesha, relief from material distress. So automatically, lot of our misery will go down when we practice Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness also gives manobal, the strength to go through the misery. Right? So misery does not really test a devotee more than what comfort zone tests a devotee. So the real trouble for a devotee starts when the devotee is, everything is going comfortable for a devotee's life. Because when we are comfortable, then we bend our Krishna consciousness and there is a chance that we may become intoxicated by being in that comfort zone. So many times it is said that the true character of a devotee is known only when the devotee is really facing misery. That is the real test. But as much as that is true, it is equally true that the true character of a devotee is also revealed when everything is going comfortable. I can see my own self here. When everything is going comfortable, my chanting is always inattentive. But the moment something goes wrong in office, some job problem or something comes up, or things are not going well, appraisal time is coming and I am under stress, some kind of material stress, or share market is going down, or interest rates are going down in India, and I am seeing, you know, oh, I am becoming poorer and poorer, something like that happens, hard earned money is going down the drain, superannuation is going down the drain, When you see something like that, then you realize, you start getting little bit more detached from all that. Otherwise, it's all a comfort zone. Seeing the Excel sheet going nicely, everything is fine. Then the mind is thinking so many other things now. Right? So therefore, this comfort zone can be a real danger for a devotee. So Vishoka. Shoka means misery. And Vishoka means a devotee is indifferent even to material happiness as well as material distress. Therefore, Kunti Maharani's prayer in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is very important. Vipada Shanto Ta Shashwat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru Bhavato Darshanam Yatya Apunar Bhava Darshanam. Oh my dear Lord, she said, when Lord Krishna was going back to Dwarka, let those calamities come again and again in my life, because only when you give me all those calamities, then I can think of you more and more. So this point is being hammered when we talk about Vishoka, the characteristic of Jivan Mukta, that Jivan Mukta is chanting with equal attention. His devotional, the intensity of his devotional life is not hampered even when he is in the comfort zone. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 16, we talk about Chaturvidha Vajante Maam, four types of devotees who come into devotional life, who surrender to Krishna. So, there is an interesting explanation by Sripad Ramanujacharya in this regard. The four types of devotees, as all of you know, is Artho, Artharthi, Jignasu and Jnani. These are the four types of devotees who surrender. Now, Sripad Ramanujacharya, in his commentary to this verse, he talks about the good qualities of such people, Artho, Artharthi, Jignasu and Jnani, as well as the bad qualities of these people. Sripad Ramanujacharya mentions that these people are glorious because they are at least honest about their intentions. That is number one. Number two, they are glorious because despite their intentions, they are not at least going to the demigods to pray. At least they are coming to Krishna. But when Sripad Ramanujacharya comments about their bad qualities, he says, all this is fine. The problem with these people is that once their desire is fulfilled, then they stop coming to Krishna. That is the problem with these kind of people. What? They don't even go to the demigods. That merit is there. But they don't even come to Krishna. An example is of Sugriva. In Ramayana, when Vali was harassing Sugriva, and when Sugriva's kingdom, wife, everything was lost, at that time Lord Ram and Lakshman helped him to regain his kingdom. Now what happened when Sugriva regained his kingdom, his wife, everything, and that Chaturmasa was going on? And at that time Sugriva went into his comfort zone. Because now everything is there. Kingdom is there, wife is there, children are there, nicely he was enjoying. And he completely forgot about the promise which he gave to Ram and Lakshman. So when Lakshman came after Chaturmasa and reminded him, then there was a misunderstanding between them. He was saying, you know, what is the basis of this relationship? And Hanuman had to come and then tell, put some sense into Sugriva, saying that it was agreed that you will come and assist us. So, this is another example that when a devotee is in the comfort zone, then the devotee forgets Krishna and he becomes inalert to Krishna consciousness. The devotee starts thinking that death is still far away. Don't realize that from our comfort zone, anytime we can be plucked. Recently I read in one book that when one sannyasi was meditating on the banks of the Ganges, he saw that there was a fish which was swimming in the water, and then suddenly there was a vulture which came from top, it came down, plucked the fish from its comfort zone, and then the fish's life was finished. The fish was living in its own nice community along with its own school, what we call as, right? So the fish was swimming on the surface. That was the problem. So, the analogy was given, the explanation was given, that if we dive deep into Krishna consciousness, then the vulture of Maya will not be able to catch us. But if we are just a surface devotee, then anytime we can be plucked from our comfort zone. So, Vishoka, the fourth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta which we discussed now, means being indifferent or callous to the material enjoyment as well as distress. So a Jivan Mukta tries to avoid misery. Okay. At this stage, a Jivan Mukta tries to avoid misery. When it comes, He says, no issue. He doesn't make an issue about it, just accepts it. The fifth characteristic of the Jivan Mukta is called as Vijirghatsa. I'll spell it for you. V-I-J-R. G-H-A-T-S-A. V-I-J-R. G-H-A-T-S-A. It's difficult to pronounce. Vijirghatsa. Which means that the Jivan Mukta at the fifth stage does not desire any material enjoyment. So in one sense, it is a higher stage than the earlier stage of Vishoka. Over there, he was indifferent to material enjoyment. So if happiness comes, he's fine with that. If distress comes, he's fine with that. However, in this stage, he does not even desire material enjoyment. He does not want any material enjoyment. That is, so it's a bit higher than before. So Srila Prabhupada explains several times, he has told in so many lectures, that material enjoyment and Krishna consciousness go ill together. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we also see this when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is advising Raghunath Das Goswami. There is an interesting verse. It says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu is saying, Jivaralalase ye iti uti daya, Jivaralalase ye iti uti daya, Sishnodara parayana Krishna hipaya. Jivaralalase ye iti uti daya, Sishnodara parayana Krishna nahi paya. Which means, he who runs, it's an interesting, it's a very powerful translation. He who runs here and there, seeking satisfaction of the palate, and who is attached to desires of the stomach and desires of the genitals, is unable to attain Krishna. He who runs here and there, seeking satisfaction of the palate, and who is attached to desires of the stomach and genitals, is unable to attain Krishna. And it is mentioned, when you say that, the desire of the stomach and the palate, it also refers to prasadam, not only to non-prasadam.
Yes.
And there's an interesting pastime which I came across pertaining to Bhakti Gaurava Narsingha Maharaj and his interaction with Srila Prabhupada. In that article it was written, Bhakti Gaurava Narsingha Maharaj himself has written that article. He said that once upon a time, there was, you know, Srila Prabhupada was visiting, and Srila Prabhupada always used to leave remnants on his plate. He used to take some sweets, some rasgulla, everything, and always leave remnants for distribution among devotees. So Srila Prabhupada found out suddenly that devotees are not really, you know, fighting for his remnants, but devotees are fighting for the rasgulla. So Srila Prabhupada one day instructed his servant to do something, and the servant did, you know, a very peculiar thing. So Bhakti Gaurav Narsingha Maharaj himself was the victim of this instruction. So when Srila Prabhupada finished, you know, his prasadam, and the plate was rasgulla was there, so Maharaj was running towards the rasgulla, you know, to be the first to pick up that, right? So immediately the servant, as soon before his hand could reach the rasgulla plate, he pulled it away. Okay? And then in front of everyone, he took the rasgulla, he crushed this with his hand and put it in the dal. And then he mixed it. And then there are other sweets. They went for the other sweets. The other sweets also were put in the dal and they were all mixed. And then after that, there was some green kind of concoction came up. And nobody knew what that, how it will taste. It was looking also a bit weird. And then he started serving it, you know, to everyone. Like, you know, Charanamrit. So they asked, what is this? Why are you doing this? He said, Srila Prabhupada has instructed me that for the next 1 week, Mahaprasadam will be served in this way. Let us see how many people are eager to come. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada thought that, you know, one should, you know, that Srila Prabhupada said that in order to be a Jivan Mukta, one has to be beyond the desires of the palate and the stomach, even if it is pertaining to prasadam. That was the lesson he gave. Now, the previous one, the previous point which we saw was Vishoka. Vishoka means that callous to any material happiness and distress. And this point which we are right now seeing, the fifth characteristic is Vijayagatsa, desiring no material enjoyment at all. Not only being indifferent, but desiring no material enjoyment. Now here, the context of Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj and Gopis is given. They are being differentiated here. Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj and the Gopis are being differentiated here. It is mentioned that Dhruva Maharaj desired material enjoyment. We all know about that past time, so I'm not going to repeat that. Dhruva Maharaj desired material enjoyment, and when finally he had the darshan of the Lord, he was very repentant about his material enjoyment. He said, my dear Lord, I aspired for broken pieces of glass and all that stuff. We all know that, whatever he said. So he was very repentant basically. But his original desire was anyway there. So when the Lord came in front of him, the Lord definitely awarded him liberation. But the Lord said, you'll have to hang on in the material world for 30,000 years before you come back. Fulfill all your desires and then come back. So, a small trace of material desire which was there in Dhruva Maharaj, he had to live within the material world. And that is Dhruva Maharaj, what to speak of us. Now, coming to Prahlad Maharaj, it is slightly on a higher plane. In fact, I heard in one lecture that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to mention that the real Bhagavatam, pure devotional service in the Bhagavatam only starts in Canto 7. Of course, every verse talks about, even the first canto onwards, there is some description of pure devotional service, but Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that real, pure, unalloyed devotion starts only from Canto 7, where the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj starts. So, if we see the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Narasingadev, even Prahlad Maharaj was not taken back immediately. In fact, Lord Narasingadev told Prahlad Maharaj, Bhogena Punyam Kushalena Papam. Which means, my dear Prahlad, you have to remain in this material world and exhaust all your pious activity, whatever you have done. Whatever Punya you have done, you have to exhaust all that by remaining in the material world. And you have to neutralize any sin that you do with piety. So this is the instruction which Lord Narasingadev gave. So even Prahlad Maharaj had to exhaust his quota and then only he can go back. And in the earlier verse we saw that when the pious activities are more dangerous, because pious activities put us in the comfort zone. And in the comfort zone we again retrograde in our devotional life. So this is a very risky proposition which Prahlad Maharaj received. But of course he was Prahlad Maharaj, so it was not so risky. But for us it's very risky. So we talked about Dhruva Maharaj, we talked about Prahlad Maharaj. Now coming to the gopis. Now with the Vrajavasi gopis, Krishna gave no such concept of Bhogena Punyam Kushalena Papam. There was no such concept for the gopis. So when some of the gopis were not allowed to meet the Lord, it is described, when the gopis were not allowed to meet Lord Krishna, it is described that the sweet anticipation of the gopis that Lord Krishna is going to come, he is going to meet us, that sweet anticipation itself burnt their pious activities. And when they were not allowed to meet Krishna, the suffering which they underwent, that burnt their any papam, or traces of papam that is there. So, the gopis attained perfection immediately, on the spot. They didn't have to wait like Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj. There was no waiting time, because the gopis are beyond the realms of sadhana bhakti. The gopis are beyond the realms of being a sadhaka, the spontaneous love. So therefore, a devotee of the Lord never prays to the Lord for any material enjoyment. It is dangerous, because even when we get darshan of the Lord, we may still have to remain in the world for 30,000 years, at least. Because such prayers extend our visa here, the material world. So this is the fifth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta. Vigrahas, Vijayadhatsa, desiring no material enjoyment. The sixth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta is called as Apipata. A-P-I-P-A-T-A. Apipata. Desiring to be engaged in Krishna conscious activities beyond all hankering. Desiring to be in Krishna conscious activities. So in the previous fifth point was Vijayadhatsa. There he was only not desiring material enjoyment. But here, he is desiring to be engaged in Krishna conscious activities. That is a higher level of maturity. So, simply not desiring material enjoyment, even the Buddhists are doing. Even the Mayavadis are doing that. So, there is nothing very great about that. Srila Prabhupada in fact mentioned that simply performing austerity without devotion is a demonic concept. Simply performing austerity without devotion is demonic, Srila Prabhupada said. Therefore, aspiring for a devotional service is much more important than simply seeking no material enjoyment. Yes. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada defined mukti as engagement in Krishna's service without human mistakes. Engagement in Krishna's service without human mistakes. So, mukti does not only mean seizing material enjoyment. It means active engagement in Krishna consciousness without human mistakes. That is Jivan Mukta. Therefore, the Vaishnava philosophy places a lot of emphasis and puts action in Krishna consciousness higher than mere renunciation of material desires. So this is the sixth step towards becoming a Jivan Mukta. The seventh step towards becoming a Jivan Mukta is Satya Kama. Satya Kama, where all desires are directed only towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Earlier, for Apipata, which we discussed, there was a desire to engage in Krishna consciousness. But there may be other desires also. But here, all desires are directed only to serving the lotus feet of the Lord. There is no other desire except serving the lotus feet. Anyavilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyana rupatam. Anukulena Krishna anusiranam bhakti rupatam. So, this desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord does not cease in this body. It continues body after body, body after body. Even after quitting this body, that desire continues. I should only serve Krishna. So this is the intense eagerness to serve the Lord. That is the seventh characteristic of a Jivan Mukta called as Satya Kama. Finally, the eighth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta is called as Satya Sankalpa. Satya Sankalpa, that is the eighth characteristic of a Jivan Mukta. It means, whatever the devotee desires, the Lord fulfills immediately or with time. Whatever the devotee desires, the Lord fulfills. Devotee desires, Lord fulfills. As simple as that. But this is a very dangerous thing. Right? When will the Lord do this? When He absolutely trusts the devotee, 100%. That he will never desire anything other than me. Only then the Lord gives this blank check to the devotee. But to attain this platform of Satya Sankalpa, wherein the Lord gives whatever we want, one has to, his Satya Kama has to be in order. The seventh stage has to be in order to beget merit for the eighth stage. Otherwise, one will desire wrongly. So, His Holiness Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he had big plans for establishing the Gaudiya Math. So somebody asked him, where are you going to get all the money from for building all this Gaudiya Math? So he said that if we desire correctly, then one brick from the spiritual world is enough to build a Gaudiya Math all over the world. One brick from the spiritual world is enough. That was his conviction. So our sankalpa has to be correct. The same happened to his disciple, Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada was told, Prabhupada, where will we generate funds for building 108 temples? Srila Prabhupada said, money is in the air. It has just to be taken. So what is needed is desire. Desire, if it is in place, money will automatically come. It is everywhere. So, Satya Sankalpa, whatever one wants, Krishna fulfills. For this stage, one's desire has to be proper. In fact, one brahmachari who was using the public transport to go for book distribution and Nam Sankirtan, he said that when I was traveling, he had to travel through the public transport before he reached the spot where he will do the book distribution and whatever, Sankirtan or whatever. He said that distributing books or doing Sankirtan in front of everyone, even alone, was not a big challenge. The challenge was in going through the public transport and watching the men and women doing all kinds of nonsense in the public transport. That was more challenging for the brahmachari. So, he said that my experience was that, why is Lord Krishna giving me this kind of a challenge? Why can't he just arrange some, temple van or something, so I don't have to bother, I can just reach the Sanketa spot. Why do I have to go through this public transport and watch all this nonsense? And he said that his realization was that till Krishna completely has confidence in the devotee that any facility that is provided to him will not be misused, the devotee will always has to go through all these turbulences. The facilities will only come, or facilities will automatically come if the desire is pure. So Satya Sankalpa, whatever one wants, Krishna fulfills. So coming back to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada never wanted to be the Prime Minister of ISKCON or the President of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada was once told that, Srila Prabhupada once said that the whole world will become Krishna consciousness. So somebody asked him, will you be the President? He said, no, I will be the spiritual master of the President. So Srila Prabhupada never wanted that kind of a position. So Srila Prabhupada said that one day Krishna conscious people will take over the administration of various countries. But Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna will only give them the reins or control when devotees mature to the Satya Kama stage. Only then it will happen. If you see Srila Prabhupada's life, if you see, he had no other desire but to fulfill the wish of his spiritual master. So when Srila Prabhupada arrived in the West, he was not fascinated by the opulences of the West. For example, when I went to US for the first time, my first desire was to go and see Las Vegas and Hollywood, which I rightfully did, based on my nature. Because I had seen it on television, so when I went there, I said, yeah, I'm in Hollywood now. So when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he was not enamored by Hollywood and Bollywood and whatever. Srila Prabhupada, far from being enamored by the West, amidst all this opulence, Srila Prabhupada saw suffering in the eyes of the Westerners. Whereas what we see is envy towards the Westerners, saying that, wow, in Australia, such nice roads are there. In India, you know, even after paying tax, the government doesn't put a road outside our house for years together. So there is an envy which we have towards the West, whereas Srila Prabhupada did not have that envy. Why? Because his desire was to give something to the West. So therefore, he was able to have compassion because there was no envy. So this is the characteristic of a Jivan Mukta. And when we have that kind of a consciousness, then Krishna provides all kinds of facilities to the devotee as soon as the devotee desires that. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada had this conviction when he was speaking to the professor in the park and he asked, where are your temples? Srila Prabhupada told him that, yeah, I have 108 temples everywhere. Then he said, where are these locations? He said, no, no, no. It's only time which is separating these temples. And of course, that fellow, he was totally confused. Okay, he just left. But Srila Prabhupada could see those temples. He was completely confident because his desires were correct. So he knew that Krishna has to fulfill that desire, because there was no other desire except serving the spiritual master. So this is the eighth and the last characteristic of Jivan Mukta, where Krishna fulfills all kinds of desires. So the visualization, it is mentioned that the visualization of Srila Prabhupada of all these 108 temples is the best example of Satya Kama manifesting. So in the battle of Kurukshetra also, it is mentioned that the Pandavas wanted detachment from their duties. They wanted material detachment. So it was Lord Krishna personally as their guru who brought them from this material detachment stage to the Satya Sankalpa stage. The Lord created the desire in the minds of the Pandavas to fight for his pleasure. So the Lord himself as guru extricated themselves from a lower level of Jivan Mukta to a high level. Rather than just seeking detachment, acting in Krishna consciousness. We see that in the Bhagavad Gita as well. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that after going through these 8 stages of Jivan Mukta, only then one becomes eligible to go back to Godhead and attain the same nature as Krishna, where there is no birth, there is no death. But to attain that platform, one has to go through these preliminary 8 stages. All of us know about His Grace Jayananda Prabhu. We celebrate his appearance day also in ISKCON. So he was a devotee of a very high caliber. In fact, Jayananda Prabhu was very, very dear to Prabhupada. Very few devotees are as dear to Srila Prabhupada as Jayananda Prabhu. When Jayananda Prabhu was to leave his body, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Jayananda Prabhu. And in that letter, he mentioned, in fact this letter was even published in the Back to Godhead magazine. In that letter, he mentioned that if you have any material desires, dear Jayananda, if you have any material desires, you will go to the heaven for 10,000 years. Srila Prabhupada told this of Jayananda Prabhu. So I got very scared when I heard this. And only when Srila Prabhupada came to know that Jayananda Prabhu, at the time of leaving his body, was chanting Hare Krishna, tightly holding on to the picture or photo of Srila Prabhupada and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only when Srila Prabhupada came to know about it, then Srila Prabhupada confirmed, yes, he has gone back to the spiritual world. But in the letter, Prabhupada has written this, one trace of material desire, 10,000 years. But one may wonder, it's not bad, after all, it is 10,000 years in heaven, it's not 10,000 years in the material world. So now we come to one more last pastime. This is from the Mahabharata. This is about heaven. This is about Mahabharata. When Mudgala Rishi was very, Mudgala Rishi, he somehow pleased Durvasa Muni by doing something. Okay. So Durvasa Muni was so pleased with Mudgala Rishi that he said, "My dear Mudgala Rishi, I offer you blessings. May you go to heaven." So, as we know this, Durvasa Muni's blessings are obviously going to be very potent. So immediately the Devadutas arrived in the airplane to pick up Mudgala Rishi. And then Mudgala Rishi was about to sit on that airplane. But he said, "One second, hang on. Let us have a discussion before I sit on your airplane." He said, "I want to know what are the advantages of going to heaven. Please tell me." So then the Devadutas said that in the heaven, it's a wonderful place. There is no old age. There is no disease. You will always be young. There is no starvation. There are damsels, beautiful women, there is nectar, ambrosia, so on and so forth. All kinds of description was given. Now Mudgala Rishi obviously was a Rishi. It's very difficult to tempt a Rishi with only the positive things. So Mudgala Rishi immediately asked the next question. He said, "Tell me, what are the disadvantages of heaven then? And why everybody is not going to heaven? There are some people in the world who don't want to go to heaven. What are the disadvantages? Tell me." So they said, the Devadutas said, that the moment you go to heaven, the entire body of the devotee is made of pious activity. The body itself is pious activity. It's made of pious activity. So when the pious activity is finished, then the body is also finished. When the quota of pious activity is finished, the body is also finished. And he mentioned that in the heavenly planets, there is a flower garland which people wear, and the indication that the red signal is coming is that the flower starts, the garland which never otherwise fades, starts fading. And then after hearing this Mudgala Rishi, then what happens after that when the flower fades? He said, after that you fall down into this material world. So he said, "Oh, okay, then what happens?" Then he said, when you fall down to this material world, then the suffering which the soul undergoes is much, much more than the suffering of a person who was already in the material world. Because now you are coming from a 5-star hotel to the streets or to the Jhopadpatti, hutments. So, and then the soul is not able to accept that. Because you are used, the soul is used to very high level of material enjoyment. So when he comes here, he is perpetually dissatisfied regardless of whatever one gets. And that explains the nature of the people who are in mode of passion. Though they get all kinds of opulence, they are very powerful in this material world, still they are not satisfied. Why? Because they have fallen down from the heavenly planets. So when, and then Uddhava Rishi, then what happens? He said, then as you go on in this mode of passion and enjoy, you can sometimes get into the mode of ignorance and do sinful activities. So Mudgala Rishi says, then what happens? Then he said, when you do the sinful activities, you may lose the human form of life also. And you have to go through 8.4 million species. Mudgala Rishi said, enough. Please take your airplane back. I don't want to be on this airplane. Then Mudgala Rishi asks another question. He doesn't leave them. He said, definitely I have decided not to come with you guys. Okay. But tell me, is there a place beyond all these dualities? So Devadatta said, yes, there is a place beyond all these dualities, but even we are not qualified to go there. They said, and then the samvad begins, the conversation begins on the Vaikuntha planet. And the Devadatta explained to him how the Vaikuntha planets are inexhaustible and it is a point of no return. So Mudga Rishi said, thank you very much for your service. I don't want your plane. I will rather perform tapasya sitting wherever I am and go to Vaikuntha planets instead of coming with all of you. So here in this verse, when we come back, it is mentioned that the living entity must struggle to revive his divine spiritual qualities, and that is the tapasya which Mudgal Rishi is talking about. That tapasya for our age is Shravanam and Kirtanam. It is said that the demigods are Karma Sachiv, which means that the example is given of the shadow. If I bend, only then my shadow is going to bend. If I don't bend, my shadow is not going to bend. So whatever I do, the shadow is merely going to reflect that. So the laws of karma work exactly like the shadow. What goes around comes around. What I do, that is what I deserve. And that is the law which is under the jurisdiction of the devatas or the demigods. Whereas Krishna is not like that. Krishna bhakti is beyond that. That's why Lord Krishna is called as Dinavatsala. Dinavatsala means that even if you don't pay obeisances, even if you don't bend, Lord Krishna will still accept our obeisances. That is Krishna against the demigods. So the tapasya for our age is we perform only for the pleasure of this Dinavatsala or Lord Krishna, which is Shravanam and Kirtanam. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord himself appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to not only to give us Vaikuntha planets, but directly to give us the Gopi Bhava. Just by following the four regulative principles and chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we don't even have to go through what? Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad or Mudgal Rishi had to go through. We don't have to go through. Directly Gopi Bhava is being given to us. However, because this mercy is coming very easily, we may not realize the value of this mercy, and that is the problem. We don't value it. One example is when Lord Indra was given a garland by Durvasa Muni once in the heavenly planets. Lord Indra was completely intoxicated because he was associating with an elephant. So Srila Prabhupada said elephant is a symbol of ignorance. Ignorant from outside as well as ignorant from inside, but huge in size. So when Durvasa Muni gave this garland to Indra, instead of accepting it with grace, he gave it to the elephant, Airavata. And elephant is ignorance. What the elephant does? Elephant has a tendency to whatever it is given, it takes, puts it under the legs and crushes that garland. So the analogy is given here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us this wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness, but because of complacency, we can just squander away that gift. So Srila Prabhupada said that one can come to the Jivan Mukta platform only if one is careful of three things. Or in other words, Srila Prabhupada said, there are only three reasons why a serious devotee can fall from the Jivan Mukta platform or from the process of becoming a Jivan Mukta. Number one is negligence of one's spiritual duties and negligence of spiritual standards. That is number one. One can fall down. And the example was given of Sukadeva Goswami when he was explaining the Srimad Bhagavatam. In Prabhupada's purport, it is mentioned that attentive, respectful hearing must be there when the speaker is speaking. And there are a lot of qualities of the hearer which is given there. So, in terms of our Shravanam, we must be attentive. In terms of our Kirtanam, also we must be attentive. In terms of our Seva, we must be attentive. So Seva, Sadhana, Seva and Sadachar, these three aspects have to be taken care of in devotional life. So Sadhana, chanting, has to be attentive. Seva, our material duties, we cannot be negligent of those. There also we have to be attentive. So the first thing which can lead to fall down is negligence of this. The second one is negligence of Sadachar, which is called as Vaishnava Aparadha. So negligence of spiritual standard of duty, and second is Vaishnava Aparadha. So if we have a tendency to conclude that every other living entity is not a Vaishnava, then already we have declared that he is not a Vaishnava. So obviously we will think that offending him or her is no big deal. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned that, which in fact Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentioned, that anyone who has accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be considered as a Vaishnava. And if we are not involved in the life of some Vaishnava, if we are not involved in their life in terms of helping them in Krishna consciousness, then we don't have any right to recklessly criticize that Vaishnava. If we do that, then we fall down. So there are three reasons why a soul can fall down. One is the negligence of spiritual standards and duties. Number two is Vaishnava Aparadha. And the third one is one can fall down simply because Krishna desires that that person fall down. Of course, it does not happen to everyone. It happened only in the case of, like in few cases, one being Jaya and Vijaya, when Krishna desired that they fall down and become Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So I'll end my class here. It's exactly 9. Thank you very much for your patient hearing. Any questions or comments?
One comment. Wonderful lecture. Very nice preparation. And you were saying 30 years. I could be 46 years.
In 46 years, marriage. Hari Bol. Gopal Deshwar will answer your question.
You were saying that if we fall down, there's chance of falling down even from the spiritual world.
Not from the spiritual world. There are chances of falling down even from a very high level of advancement. Because Srila Prabhupada says one does not fall from the spiritual world.
But we're all here in this prison of, you know, Maya. Because we've fallen down from where?
Spiritual world.
So if there's a chance of falling down, I mean, that's a little spooky and scary, isn't it?
Yeah, but this question has been asked many times in ISKCON to many Maharajas, as well as asked many times to Srila Prabhupada. And there is a book also which Srila Prabhupada has written. I forgot the name of the book. But it's very clearly mentioned that the devotee falls down from the spiritual world once. But once the devotee becomes once bitten, twice shy. And after going through all this, then the soul remembers all these things. The soul does not forget in the spiritual world. The soul remembers the miseries of this material world, and the soul never desires to come back into the material world a second time. So Srila, therefore, even in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, having attained that abode, one never comes back again. Of course, one can still come back, but not because one has to again practice sadhana bhakti, but one will come back as an agent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Srila Prabhupada came down on another mission. That's what I understand.
One more,
sorry.
So, at the time of death, we are, of course, without this body, and what we remember at the time of death, according to our lifestyle, you know, emotional life, or whatever, what we remember at the time of death, it determines our next body. But then karma, where does karma come in according to that? And then the mind is not this body. The soul, we are spirit soul. So, I just. So our next body, how is it? We are supposed to do any pious activities also as devotees, only trying to please Krishna. So as a devotee, what is pious and what is not pious?
So devotional life, to my understanding, is beyond piety and impiety. It's beyond sukarma and vikarma. Devotional life is akarma. So coming to the question of at the time of death, what decides our next lifetime? My understanding is that it is based on two things. Our next, whether we are remaining in the material world and what body we get in the material world, where we are born, it depends on two things. One is our desire and one is our merit. Without merit, desire itself is not enough. There has to be merit. For example, if I desire an opulent lifestyle in my next lifetime, then I have to have enough quota of pious karma. Without that, then I don't get that. For example, Dhritarashtra. When Dhritarashtra's children, 100 children were killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra asked, why me? Why did I have to get this punishment of seeing all my 100 children killed? So it was told, Dhritarashtra was told that many lifetimes back you had burnt the nest of a bird where the birds were also along with their children there. So you had burnt that nest. many lifetimes back. So Dhritarashtra said, then why, if it was many lifetimes back, then why did I not get that punishment at that time? Okay, so he was told that your sins were so high that to beget another human body you had to do so many pious activities. Yeah. So after so many pious activities, you got a human body, you got the merit, but now that thing was there, that punishment had to be given to you in your human lifetime. Therefore, now you are getting that punishment. So that is how the law of karma works. So there has to be desire. The next life depends on desire as well as merit. So if we desire only for the Lord, as was mentioned here, the Satya Sankalpa, if we saw, then Satya Kama, if our desires are only to please Krishna, then there is no way that we will ever have a thought of something else at the time of lifetime. So that is the practice of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, as I understand, sadhana means practice, devotional life in practice. So unless one practices through the early stages itself, then it's very difficult suddenly for a devotee to transition into that platform. However, there is always, you know, this dependence of causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada. When devotees ask Srila Prabhupada, we are so fallen, you know, and we don't think that we are going to even attain, you know, any semblance of that stage which you are talking about, of remembering Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, don't worry, just chant and be happy. Chant 16 rounds, follow 4 related principles, I will take you through the back door, Prabhupada said. So, people like me, you know, we have only that hope.
Hope
sustains life. Srimad Bhagavatam ki,
Jai
Jai Kai Gaurav Maharaj.